in the afternoon. Must be time for Meet Me at the Diner. Hey, I'm Ann Eller right here with you, and I have Bobby Norfolk. Let me tell you, he came into town yesterday afternoon, was at the library, at the schools today and tomorrow, and I was fortunate enough to snag him for an interview this afternoon. He's an internationally known story performer and teaching artist, three-time Emmy Award winner, and Parent Choice honoree. And he's here to tell his story this afternoon right here on WCRS. How are you doing, Bobby Norfolk?
I am doing fine.
God, what a great radio voice.
<Thank you. laughs>
Absolutely. You said you'd also done some radio, huh, too?
Yes, I have, back in the day.
Back in the day.
Saturday morning radio show on storytelling and comedy.
Comedy, yeah. Now, you also, in comedy. You used to perform at what, a place? I love the name, the Funny Bone?
The Funny Bone Comedy Club.
Yeah.
There is a circuit that was based out of St. Louis. And so when big name acts came through, like Roberta Flack and Lou Rawls and B.B. King, I would usually be their opening act.
How was it to be their opening act?
Was it awesome?
It
was. It was phenomenal. And I really thought that was my life path for a while, because what I had done, I had patterned myself after two comedians who were diametrically opposed to one another in terms of their material, Bill Cosby and Richard Pryor.
Oh, my God. How did you put those two together?
I have no idea. But I saw what they did on stage, and they're both storytellers.
Yeah, they are.
Their fee schedule would not reflect that, but they are both storytellers.
Yeah, but Pryor was a little bit raw.
Raw was his second album.
I happen to know that. So how did you put Bill Cosby and Pryor together into one? That would be an interesting combination.
When I was in stand-up comedy, in the clubs, I was raw.
You were raw.
I did risque comedy. And I found out that after a while, when I wanted to go into the schools, I had to change my act. Hello. And so I studied Cosby. As a matter of fact, I did a program on Scott Joplin in the history of ragtime several years ago. And when I performed this piece at one school, three teachers came up to me and said, "Mr. Norfolk, we've been conferring here, and you either remind us of a skinny Bill Cosby or a clean Richard Pryor." And I said, "You're spot on."
How about that? That's pretty amazing, isn't it?
Yes, the insights were just impeccable.
That's terrific. But you weren't always in comedy or storytelling. In fact, tell us about your growing up. There's an interesting side story here about your growing up.
I stuttered from kindergarten to the 10th grade.
Stuttered terribly. How'd you get rid of it?
I had teachers who saw things in me I didn't see in myself, and I think that is the mark of a master teacher, to see inside the student, to see what that student has in terms of God-given gifts and inspiration that has not been revealed yet. So they put me in drama class and in glee club and choral, talent shows, poetry recitations. Whenever I performed, wouldn't stutter.
There are actors and singers alike that don't do that. Mel Tillis, for one, that I remember. Yeah.
Mel Tillis, who I first time I saw on the Johnny Carson show, and he stuttered off stage, as I did. But I found out through my own sort of helping myself to, as Benjamin Franklin would say, heal thyself. It was the meter, rhythm, and rhyme of my performance, being other personas in theater. And doing singing recitations and poetry recitations. I was not who I was when I was performing, and so somehow something in my brain overcame the stuttering complex. Same thing happened with other well-known acts, like Bruce Willis. A lot of people don't realize Bruce Willis stuttered, as did James Earl Jones.
Wow. No, I didn't realize that. How unbelievable. So when you were in high school and getting ready to graduate, what did you want to be? This is a great story, folks. This is a storyteller story.
Bond. James Bond.
There's a lot of us that wanted to be,
Sean Connery, that was it.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to join the Secret Service. Not Her Majesty's Secret Service, but the United States, CIA, FBI. So I started putting in applications for Howard University, George Washington University, and then I wanted to be a page at one of the departments of justice or Treasury Department. But the fates had something else in store.
Okay.
I ended up being a National Park Service ranger.
But how did you get from that to that? Did it have anything to do with scholarships or anything?
It was a quantum leap. The Ross and Perita Company,
yes,
Checkerboard Square, based out of St. Louis, wanted to give fellowships away. They had 13 fellowships, and 300 of us were into a competition at St. Louis University. And I had no idea what a fellowship was at the time, but I knew what $10,000 was.
Absolutely.
Yes. And so after 5 days of competition for 300 of us to get 13 fellowships, I was one of the 13.
What did you have to do for the competition?
We were in all sorts of exercises and interviews with professors. At one point, these professors said, here are crayons and pencil and paper. They gave us construction paper. They said, draw what you want to be doing in 10 years. And I was had no idea I wanted to be a performer, but I drew myself on stage with a microphone with an audience. But at the time, I wanted to be in mass media.
Right.
I wanted to work for CBS Evening News.
And who was your favorite there?
Walter Cronkite.
Now give us that final line. I got to hear it here.
And that's the way it is. October 29th, 2012. This is Walter Cronkite.
Fabulous. I tell you, with that, I've got to take a second. It's time for us to hear a word from our sponsors. We'll be right back.
Monday, happy days. Tuesday, Wednesday, happy days.
Gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Right back here at Sharp Facets Gallery. Hey, if you've got a question for Bobby Norfolk, don't hesitate to give us a call. 229-7984. That's 229-7984. He is an internationally known story performer. We're getting the early days. Yes, we just heard from Walter Cronkite. God, I wonder who else I can think of to make him talk like, ooh, this is going to be fun. But so you thought you wanted to be a work for CBS News or whatever, yes, in mass media?
I did. Especially at one point, I even met Dan Rather on a connecting flight between here and Salt Lake City, Utah. And I gave him my business card, and he was a very gracious man.
Yes.
Very gracious. No arrogance about him at all. We had a nice chat. But again,
that was a long time ago.
A long, long time ago. Yes. He had just taken over from Cronkite, as a matter of fact, at
wow.
that point. But I wanted to perform, and so the fellowship that I talked about was basically for a school within the St. Louis environment.
Mm-hmm.
It had to be in the environs of St. Louis.
So you couldn't go to Washington, D.C.?
Could not go to D.C. and could not go to University of Missouri-Columbia, which has an excellent journalism school, and so I majored in history and minored in journalism,
mm-hmm.
and at that point, I got the job as a National Park Ranger.
Yeah, but how did you get that job? I mean, if you wanted to be the Walter Cronkite replacement here, how did you get that job?
Okay, now, here's the connecting thread.
Follow along, everybody.
All right, stay with us now, people. The guy that I was good friends with at UM St. Louis wanted to go to pre-law. Somebody had asked him if he wanted to work as a park ranger as a summer seasonal that year in 76, during the bicentennial.
Yeah, right.
And so he did not want the job, and I needed a summer job, and so I went down to the Gateway Arch, which was a national monument that I didn't know about. I thought it was a city-run operation, and the chief ranger wanted me to start the next day. The next day. I thought I was going for an interview, but I wanted to work at Lake of the Ozarks as a I was a counselor, mm-hmm. as a matter of fact. It was a counseling position, and I had already signed the contract. So he said, start the Monday after you get back. And I thought it was a summer seasonal job, and 10 years later, I resigned. And the superintendent even had a father-son chat with me. He said, Norfolk, you're going to be resigning from the Park Service and starting your job as a storyteller, and I predict you will earn in about 2 years more in a week than I earn in a month.
How about that?
And he was right. He said, also look for that light at the end of the tunnel. Just make sure it's not an oncoming train.
Absolutely. Right. Now, when you were working for the Park Service, one of the things I didn't realize is underneath the arches is a huge museum.
The Museum of Westward Expansion, size of a football field, yes. And it's the area where the Lewis and Clark expedition started off May 14th, 1804, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and took 2 years to get up to the Oregon coast and come back to St. Louis to report to Thomas Jefferson what they had found.
And so you told stories about the history of our country for 10 years.
For 10 years.
And but you also were doing other things, too, while you were doing this. You didn't just work for the as a park service
ranger. Exactly. I had some side gigs, which basically enhanced the work as a park ranger. I did work with the St. Louis Black Repertory Company, 8 plays with them when the theater was dark. Then I worked as a comedian. But when I put those elements of my work into the living history, I found that I could take this work to another level. And story performer became my title. And I was then in awe of what I was doing. I had no idea where this thing was headed, but when I would start off with a tour of 35 kids and 2 teachers, would end up with about 200 people who wanted just to hear the story that I was telling.
Why is that? Why do you think that is, Bobby? I mean, what makes a storyteller good? What makes somebody want to listen to? Because we've all been on museum tours and said, how much longer is this going to take? What makes for a good storyteller?
A well-told story has many elements, and one has to realize that the human brain is hardwired for story. Everything we see, hear, taste, touch, and smell revolves around story with a capital S. And so what I would do is to take story speak, as I call it, not just say, well, over here we have a rifle from 1865, and over there there's a keelboat there that was used. I would bring all those artifacts into a story. And the brain being hardwired for story would automatically go into story listening mode.
Now, so I guess that would mean that when the kids and the adults left, they had a lot greater retention about what they had just seen.
Exactly, which is why I became a teaching artist, because what I found out was that, for example, there was this one piece of work that I did on the Lewis and Clark expedition, performed it full out in a North Carolina school, and after I finished, the kids rushed to the library to find out more about Lewis and Clark.
That's a lot of power.
Yes, the teacher said, I have not seen these children in my media center all semester. And now they're in here pulling books out on history.
That is, it is a sad thing when you think about history, because in a lot of aspects we're forgetting history in today's world. And history is so important. I mean, I wish actually as a kid I had paid attention more to history, because I mean, a lot of political stuff now today and everything, and it certainly would have served me well to understand the history of the past, but we don't even have civics in a lot of schools anymore.
Exactly, exactly. And I think that is the ancient art of storytelling is an art form that I want to bring back to the schools. There were several studies done about storytelling hypnosis. One study was done where a group of kids were brought into a study group and they had electrodes hooked to their temples. They rolled in a television on a cart. They had them watch television.
Mm-hmm.
They looked at the graph. The neuroscientists saw almost a flatlining of brain activity.
Okay.
They rolled the television away, brought in a storyteller telling full out, looked at the chart. It was almost off the graph. Synapses were being fired in the brain.
Kind of like when people are dreaming.
Exactly.
They show the same type of
REM, rapid eye movement. The synapses were being formed, and images were being fired in the brain.
So how does that relate, though, to with all the texting and all of this? How does that relate to today with your storytelling and everything? How does it relate? Do people, is it a dying art, or is it something that's going to survive the times?
There's a pitch battle going on, like the battle between good versus evil.
Good versus yes. evil. What's yes. the good now? Kids would say texting and all that stuff, I guess.
Oh, yeah. And they think that it is the savior of us all. Even people who think that technology is the next level may be wrong. Kurzweil, who is a futurist, let me get his first name, Kurzweil thought that we have reached the apex of human evolution, and now we have to have computer chips in our brain to take human beings to the next level of evolution. And I think that is bordering on madness.
Right, I agree with you
yes.
there.
Because what I found out, one thing that helped me stop stuttering was meditation. The simple art of meditation, just sitting and doing slow, deep breathing. What happens is that the blood pressure begins to drop, the mm-hmm. heart rate decreases, and dormant brain cells are enlivened. And intuition is now being fed. And that is the power of the human brain, intuition. And that's how I live my life, through my intuitive powers. Women have the power of intuition to a much greater degree than men, but with meditation, it is enhanced in men.
So, what are you saying, that storytelling is in a battle to remain vibrant in today's world?
It is. And there's this disconnect right now with the generations passing story on to the next generation. There's this new phenomenon that I heard about on NPR called the Moth, M-O-T-H,
mm-hmm.
where these 20 and 30-somethings are going into bars and nightclubs, and they sign up, and they put their names in a hat, and then 10 people who get chosen tell a personal story for 10 minutes. They have no idea. It's called storytelling. They mm-hmm. basically call it spoken word.
Right.
And it is a phenomenon that has swept from coast to coast.
So people are going back to it. Is that what you're
They're
saying?
They're going back to it and don't even realize it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm always afraid that people are losing the inability to have conversations.
Yes, people are texting one another in the same house.
Or sitting across the table from each other. I've seen people at dinner going, oh, I just got a text. You want to read it? I mean, you know, when you're going, hello,
exactly.
How about talk?
Hello.
Yeah.
Yes, this conference that goes on every year, TED, mm-hmm. which is Technology, Entertainment, and Design, TED is a very powerful resource for going into the 21st century. However, to go to any TED talk, one of the prerequisites is you must leave all technological devices in your hotel room. Leave your BlackBerries and iPods and your computers in the room. Bring a pencil and a pad to write on and your imagination.
That brings us to another question. What about people being able to write? Aren't they doing away with just being able to print or cursive writing now?
Yes, that whole thing about texting is that people are finding out now that the dictionary is becoming obsolete.
What do you say about that? I find that phenomenal that we could have a language that we may not even be able to communicate in 20 years from now.
Exactly. And I tell these educators is that no matter how much you want to teach these children in computer labs about laptops and texting,
tablets, yes.
never learn how to use a pen and paper. J.K. Rowling, who wrote all 7 of her Harry Potter novels, used a pen and a legal pad.
Who would believe that now? You know, who would actually believe that?
$5 billion later, yeah. Who would think that she did not use a laptop or a word processor? And in none of the Hogwarts schools in her books do you hear about any technological device. There's a quill, parchment, and an inkwell.
That's
the,
it.
The magic of that is that J.K. Rowling knew that there is a magic that takes place in the human brain called thought. The thought then comes down through the arm.
And
then those nerve centers, that extension, bleeds out onto the paper via pen and paper in the form of print.
Absolutely. Well, I am here with Bobby Norfolk. We are going to hear South Carolina news. I certainly hope you're going to stay right with us. Fascinating stuff as we talk about storytelling, texting, writing. Who knows what else we'll talk about. So don't you go away. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood.
This is Philip Biffle, your Greenwood Edward Jones Financial Advisor. Do you have a recovery plan for your investments? If not, there are several reasons we think you should. While interest rates are very low, certain income strategies and investments could help increase your investment income. Also, many investment portfolios are out of balance at a time when proper investment diversification may be most critical. You also may want to review your portfolio to consider replacing lower quality investments with higher quality investments that may be at protracted prices. No one can control what the market will do next. You can, however, take advantage of investment opportunities that exist today. At the same time, it is important to be well positioned for whatever the market does tomorrow. Please call me, Philip Biffle, or stop by my office today to develop your personalized recovery plan investment strategy. Please call me, Philip Biffle, at 229-0444, or stop by my office today to develop your personalized recovery plan investment strategy. Edward Jones, Making Sense of Investing, member SIPC.
That's right. We're right back here with Bobby Norfolk. He was at the library yesterday. He's at the schools today and tomorrow. We are fortunate to have him in studio this afternoon with us. He's an internationally known story performer. Didn't start out that way, but it sure has turned out good for him. And Bobby, we were just talking about language and texting and that J.K. Rowling did all of her work without a word processor or a computer. And my God, she's done well.
She's done quite well financially.
And so what do you think about today's world, where we're going with all this texting and everything has to be on the computer and all this stuff?
I heard of one study where a group of teenagers were listening to a storyteller, and then afterwards they were given pencil, paper, and crayon, and the neuroscientist said, now draw the images that you saw in the story. He saw nothing but pencils poised above paper. They could not relate what they had heard into their mind's eye and make it come out on the paper. They were losing the power of imagination. Too many computer games was the problem. They found an excellent book that's out called The Shallows.
The Shallows.
Yes. And it talks about the danger of too much computer technology in our youth today.
Well, I think that's just like doing away with recess in the schools.
Yes, they think it's fluff.
Yes, it's not necessary, but it is necessary.
Yeah, Einstein even knew. He said the work of children is play.
Yeah, and we've forgotten that in a lot of aspects, I think.
Exactly.
You know, and when you look at the arts and, you know, when you look at budget cuts and this type of thing, that's the first thing they talk about is cutting some of the art programs and everything. And we've gotten behind in science and math and everything. How do you balance those out today? How do you do that? Where do you make it? How do you justify?
Sometimes there's no justification for cutting out the arts. I mean, leave those sports alone. Now, those gladiator activity. Oh, yeah, I'm cutting my sports. But
we're in football season here, Bobby.
Exactly.
Be careful.
Football, basketball, it's all sacrilegious to touch the
It is.
And somebody even said, I think it was at Ohio State University, one of their star quarterbacks, say, I heard this on CNN, star quarterback, OSU, he said, why do I have to go to class? I got this scholarship to play football. The administration kind of backpedaled on that one when that hit the national news. He had, as a matter of fact, he put it out on a tweet.
On a tweet, yes.
Yes.
Yes. Do you tweet?
No.
You have a cell phone, though, don't you?
I don't have a cell phone, but...
do you travel with a tablet and a computer and all that jazz?
I don't use all of that. As a matter of fact, what I do have are audiobooks.
Audiobooks?
Audiobooks, where I put that iPod on or I put it into the car deck. I have, like, for example, all 7 of the Harry Potter novels on CD. Jim Dale does the narration. Mm-hmm. British actor. He created 125 voices. One man, 125 voices. Got a Grammy for Goblet of Fire.
Wow.
And so I listen to what I call the modern mythology. And this is what transports me. But I don't have a land phone anymore at the house. So
okay. So you have joined
the
somewhat.
Mobile.
Yes.
Yeah. I've traveled the world three times, and America is the only nation that says cell phone. Everybody else said mobile.
Mobile. Phone. Okay. We got mobile here. All right. We become educated here this afternoon. Okay. All right. So so you took this from because you became a storyteller, but then as you were telling stories and everything and with the arts and everything, you had to kind of change the way you were presenting it, didn't you?
I did.
And why was that?
It was the changing of the times and how I would take voices that I would hear, even...
Voices he would hear, okay.
Not in my head. Stay with me now, Ann. I didn't need a shrink.
Okay. All right, go ahead.
The voices that I heard from other people.
Yes.
And then even the sounds of doors. My drama teacher in high school said, you make the high sounds in the head, middle sound in the throat, deepest sounds in the chest. She said it was lips, teeth, tip of the tongue, lips, teeth, tip of the tongue, lips, teeth, tip of the tongue. And so I started to create sound effects. So it would enhance the story to use sound effects. And then because I had worked a lot in yoga, just to keep myself healthy and all this traveling. And then I was on the gymnastics team for a while in high school, studied martial arts after high school and college. I am a very physical storyteller.
And so, now I'm scared. He's a very physical storyteller.
I'm not taken anybody out yet in my story.
Okay, all right. But do you still keep up with doing yoga and this type of thing in today?
I do. I have to. It is a survival technique for traveling the road. And when I get to a hotel, I just take a couple of bath towels, throw them out on the floor, and do some hatha yoga, or basically find out if there's a decent exercise room in some of these hotels, or just go for long walks.
Sure. Now, do you have to have music or iPods or when you're walking and everything? Or do
no,
you
not
like
at all.
Like
not
to...
at all. I have this vivid imagination, and that's all I need.
Now, your stories, I think you told me you had, 150 different stories?
Yes.
In your repertoire?
Yes.
Okay. Do you write yourself? Do you write stories yourself?
Some of the pieces are original, and a lot of the stories I get from 398.2. You know, librarians love that, in the Dewey Decimal System, folk tales and fairy tales. And a lot of times I would take ancient stories from the Brothers Grimm or Anansi the Spider stories, and then I would recreate those stories and put my own signature to those stories. But I have been traveling, as I said, so much that I've created my own stories where I can now have my own memoir, which will be published by January 2013.
How about that?
Yes, my scariest, funniest, and most insightful stories in my travels.
Unbelievable. That's terrific. Now, what type of reaction do you get from people that have heard your stories? You know, I go back to this, all this texting and CDs and TV and everything. You were telling me an interesting story about a moving park or a lack of a moving parking lot story. I thought that one was great.
A woman in Seattle, Washington had written me a letter. You know, people actually
wrote a letter.
Letters.
Yes.
I know. Imagine that. A letter came in the mail with a postage stamp. And she said that she was coming back from a soccer game with about six kids in the minivan. There was a traffic accident on the turnpike. These kids were mutinous. They had not had their lunch yet, and who knows how long they would be there in that highway situation. She had one of my CDs in the glove compartment, popped that in, shut those kids down. They went into storytelling hypnosis. And she couldn't believe it. She thought they were asleep. She kept looking up in the rearview mirror, and they were just bug-eyed.
Now, was this a video or just the CD? Just the power of your
audio.
Voice? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The power of the spoken word, just audio. And because the minivan has speakers that surround sound,
right.
That got them. They had no escape.
Wow. That's pretty amazing. That had to make you feel good.
It did. I have no idea what type of power storytelling is until people come back and let me know these things.
Yeah, it's really important to get that feedback, isn't it?
Exactly.
You said you had an interesting story here today in Greenwood when you were leaving one of the classrooms.
Yes, one of the seventh grade boys wanted me. He said, will you be my grandpa? I looked at him. I said, okay, I'll be your adopted grandson. And I'd be, you be my grandson. However, then there were other kids who didn't want me to leave. They did not want to go to the next period class. They wanted me to stay.
I wonder what the reaction to the teacher is to that. What did the teacher feel about that?
Oh, she was just in awe of that element of these kids, not seeing that side of them before, because she thought that they were going to be bored, maybe, and they couldn't wait to get to the next class. She actually pulled them out of computer lab to come hear me tell. And so, yeah.
She thought there was going to be resentment from being pulled out
yes.
of computer lab. Wow. Well, when we come back, maybe I'll get him to tell us a short story here on the air. Don't you go away. If you're driving, make sure you stay alive and awake, because we're going to hear from Bobby Norfolk when we come back. Let's hear a quick word from our sponsors.
The weekend comes, my cycle humps, ready to...
Gold dust at my feet, on the sunny side of...
This year will be a simpler year. One fine gift to last a lifetime, from Mother Earth with love. A diamond to light the way and create the energy to keep your love alive. Only at Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72 Greenwood, 229-6276.
That's right. We're right back here, Sharp Passes Gallery, this afternoon. We are talking to Bobby Norfolk right here. It's gotten kind of cloudy and overcast, but it sure is warm and toasty in here. Certainly hope you're enjoying our conversation with Bobby Norfolk this afternoon. He's an internationally known story performer and teaching artist. He's been he's here in Greenwood today and tomorrow at the school. Sunday he was at the library. So, Bobby, I thought I might impose upon you and see if you might share one of your great stories with us here this afternoon so people can hear the what you can do.
There's a piece of work that I learned when I was doing my first poetry reciting in college, and Paul Lawrence Dunbar is the poet.
Okay.
Born in Dayton, Ohio, and he went to high school with these two guys named Wilbur and Orville Wright. They were his best friends. So here are the Wright brothers and this little black boy named Paul Lawrence Dunbar, best friends in Dayton, Ohio. The Wright brothers went to Kitty Hawk. Dunbar went into poetry and literature. And in 1895, he wrote a book, and it was called Majors and Minors. And in that book, there is a poem that it's a love poem.
Okay.
In the form of story. And it sounds rhythmic. As a matter of fact, it sounds like hip-hop. You do like hip-hop, right?
And, oh, absolutely.
Of course
it's
you
my
do.
Favorite.
I see that baseball cap turned sideways on your head right
absolutely.
Now.
Absolutely. Sure, let's give it a roll here.
And Arsenio Hall, when he was on television, mm-hmm. had Dr. Maya Angelou on. And she performed this piece, too, and it gave me the inspiration to perform it in public myself. This Dunbar piece. Also on the bill that night with Maya Angelou was Snoop Dogg.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Yeah, that was his first TV appearance. He was Snoop Pup back at the time.
Okay.
Had not made dog status. And she took this young boy to school. She let him know what hip-hop was all about. It did not start in the 1980s. It started way back on the African continent. It was a blend of meter, rhythm, and rhyme. And Dunbar popularized this thing that is now rap and hip-hop. It's a love poem. The scenario is a young man had dated a girl one time, took her home, came back with flowers, and she saw him out of her window. Oh, he's bringing me flowers. He's so sweet. He did not see her in the window. He was distracted about last night's date bringing her flowers. So Dunbar set this thing up with the refrain, jump back, honey, jump back.
Okay.
And it goes like this. It's a little finger snap rap. I seen my lady home last night. Jump back, honey, jump back. Held her hand and squeeze it tight. jump back, honey, jump back. Hear her sigh, a little sigh, seen a light gleaming from her eye, and a smile go flitting by. Jump back, honey, jump back. I heard the wind blow through the pine. Jump back, honey, jump back. The mockingbird was singing fine. Jump back, honey, jump back, ho. And my heart was beating so when I reached my lady's door that I couldn't bear to go. Jump back, honey, jump back. I put my arm around her waist. Jump back, honey, jump back. Raise her lips and took a taste. Ooh, jump back, honey, jump back. He said, love me, honey, love me true, love me well as I love you. And she answered, course I do. Jump back, honey, jump back.
Bravo, bravo. That was great. And that was back from what, 1895?
1895.
And the poet was?
Paul Laurence Dunbar.
How about that? And we all think everything is so modern.
So modern, yeah. Little do they know, there's nothing new in this world. What goes around comes around.
They used to say that about design and, you know, fashion. When you look at fashion, how the things come around.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Well, here we are with Bobby Norfolk today. We just had we had a little free entertainment here this afternoon. Thank you so much, Bobby.
My pleasure.
Now, as we finish up here and talk a little more about your life, where would you like to see yourself? You know, you've been doing stories, you've been traveling, you've been around the world, you've done all these things. What would be the next level you'd like to take this to?
I would love to get involved again in live theater. I love live theater, but one-man shows more than ensemble work.
Yeah.
I love to perform in one-man shows and performing in a theater setting rather than me going to schools, having people come to me in a concert hall.
Sure. That puts a lot of pressure, doesn't it?
It puts a lot of pressure on the people that bring me to libraries because my fee schedule would change. Sorry about that, Prudence.
You know, though, it has to be very rewarding work to work with kids.
It is, amazingly so. And I have seen so many what I call small miracles. As a matter of fact, my wife and I have written a book called The Moral of the Story, Folk Tales for Character Development, where we talk about the small miracles where we have seen children transformed before our very eyes after hearing the power story. One boy, sixth grade boy in Chicago, I had him work with me for about 5 minutes, and the teachers later said that he has severe autism, and we had no idea he would be up there working with you one-on-one, but he had heard me tell stories for 40 minutes.
And
he was transformed.
That's terrific. Now, do you ever hear back from kids maybe that you influenced and, you know, down the road? You've been doing this for a good while.
Well, 34 years. And when I had the TV show on the CBS affiliate in St. Louis, it's called Gator Tales,
mm-hmm.
where Grouchy Gator would have a problem that would be usually unique to children's problems. These children grew up on Gator Tales. It ran from 88 to 92 and won 3 Emmy Awards.
Wow.
He would have won 4, except some guy named Captain Kangaroo was on PBS one year, and he took the Emmy that year. Who is that guy? But anyway.
Well, he's not around anymore.
You're wrong.
Captain Kangaroo took that award.
Took that award.
Darn, I hate when that happens.
So 3 out of 4 wasn't bad, but there was this one guy who grew up on Gator Tales, and he saw me in a supermarket. He had a beard. He said, the Gator Dude, oh, man, I remember you from Gator Tales.
Does that make you feel old?
Vintage.
Vintage. Oh, I like that word much better. Vintage.
Like wine and cheese, I improve with age.
Yes, vintage. Now, what kind of reaction do you get? You said you had been to Hong Kong. What type of reaction do you have over there?
It was amazing because these people learn English in kindergarten.
Right.
They speak better English than we do by the time they hit third grade. And so being a former British colony, I had no language barrier there in Hong Kong, and they love story. In Wales, in London, in Indonesia, the Philippines, Singapore, they all love story. as I mentioned earlier, the human brain is hardwired for story.
So you had a great time doing that, I guess, huh?
Incredible. I am blessed to say that I have gone further one way than most people go round trip.
Yeah. That is so amazing. So where do you head to next after you leave Greenwood?
Go to the great state of Alabama.
Alabama.
Sweet home Alabama, where the skies are blue.
That's a
song, isn't it?
Yeah, there is a song about that. Now, it's a good thing you're not headed to New York or Washington, D.C.
Oh, no, I'm trying to head west.
Head west, young man, head west. Well, did you ever think when you were telling stories and putting living history together in St. Louis that this would be the travels that you would make in life?
No idea. Basically, I thought I'd be sitting behind a desk, being a radio announcer or TV spokesperson, but storytelling obviously was predestined for me to do.
Well, if you ever need a job in radio, you got a great voice for it. I'm sure you can find a job in radio somewhere, but the storytelling I know keeps you on your toes. I know that you're looking forward to theater, and someday maybe we'll be able to see you on the big stage, right?
Yes, in the theater.
In the theater. Theater, let's get it right. Well, who is one of your favorite people to imitate?
Well, there was this one thing that I had been told once, where these three teachers had seen me perform the Scott Joplin program on Ragtime, and the three teachers said, "Mr. Norfolk, you remind us either of a skinny Bill Cosby or a clean Richard Pryor." And I had studied both of them in my early work. So I think they had it spot on at that point.
Okay. So give me a short, skinny Bill Cosby or a clean Richard Pryor.
Do we have that much time?
No, we don't have a lot of time. But I thought maybe a few words you could put together here for
us. A nickel is a nickel and a dime is a dime. I would tell you more, but we've run out of time. That's for an outtake.
There you go. That's good. Hey, you know what? It certainly has been a pleasure having you here today. I'm so glad you could stop by and spend some time with us here today.
Yes, ma'am. Thanks for the invite.
Absolutely. Now, we will be posting this audio and video on the website, as we always do. Bobby Norfolk, thanks so much for coming by and spending time with us here on Meet Me at the Diner. Thank you so much.
Thank you, ma'am.
All right. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Bye-bye, everybody. Have a great afternoon. I'll be back in the morning on the I Love M Show. Bye-bye.